Well, it's my great pleasure to once again bring together a celebrated crew of people. On the phone, we have Philip Manning, news director for KTNA in Talkeetna. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be back.
And here in the studio, we have sitting near the window so she can look longingly at the outside world, Zaz Hollander.
Good morning, Mike.
And more, a little bit more in the dark, we have Mark, who is over on the side. Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Mark in the dark. That's me. Good to be here.
And Philip, let's begin with you because you're occasionally available, and there have been some recent developments in the Talkeetna area and potential for more. I'm going to start with the action taken by the Borough Assembly on Tuesday, which seemed to indicate that there would be some improvements in the near term in the water system and sewer system in Talkeetna. Talk a little bit about that. How's that been received?
Sure. Well, you know, it seems like every time I come on, the sewer and water system comes up because it has been such a persistent infrastructure problem here in Talkeetna. And a big part of that is that there's basically a structural deficit at this point where you've got a system with fewer than 200 people and the math just doesn't pencil out for having that customer base pay for even the operation of the system, let alone any future capital improvements. So then you add on to the fact that the system is more than or getting on 30 years old at this point. But specifically, the improvements that are likely to come in the near future are the ones that are going to be mandated by the Department of Environmental Conservation, because Talkeetna's sewer lagoon was out of compliance for more than a year, and DEC, you know, took notice and told the borough, hey, you're out of compliance, and we can charge you up to $30,000 a day for being out of compliance. Now, that's not actually likely to happen. They've been in closed-door meetings pretty much since that memo was sent. So what happened on Tuesday is Randall Kowalki, who is District 7 Matsu Borough Assembly member, who represents the Upper Valley, he proposed a sales tax for the Talkeetna Sewer and Water District of 3% with the goal of not only getting operations back in the black, but providing a revenue stream to build up reserves, potentially take out loans, that sort of thing. Because, I mean, the simple truth is the system does need work and is just going to continue to need more work as it continues to age at this point. As far as reception, on an official level, reception was initially good when the idea was floated. The Talkeetna Community Council, Talkeetna Chamber of Commerce, and the Talkeetna Sewer and Water Advisory Board all signed on. Now, in at least two of those cases, they did specify that they wanted a seasonal sales tax, whereas this proposal is for year-round. So I'm not sure that support is going to be as strident going forward. But there does seem to be, at least amongst people who follow this kind of thing, there seems to be kind of a base level of knowledge that something has to be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Assemblymember Kowalki is becoming notorious for introducing legislation just to get people talking. So I would think it's entirely possible that they could amend it toward a seasonal tax. And at the least, I mean, obviously what this does is target the people who are maxing out the system. I mean, those less than 200 year-round residents are one thing. The aging system, I mean, Philip, all of Philip's points are very well taken, but you have hundreds of thousands of people, tens of thousands of people coming through off the cruise ships, and there is no cruise ship facility in Talkeetna. And Philip, correct me if I'm wrong, the Denali Arts Council, they're not going to supply restrooms this summer, is that right?
They're, as far as I'm aware, they have backed off of that. And that's a bit of a saga in and of itself, but
sure,
it comes down to their water bill, essentially, is a big part of that, the reason why they're not going to be doing that, yeah.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, has there been any kind of analysis about what a seasonal sales tax might bring in as opposed to year-round?
You know, that was one of the questions I had for Assemblymember Kowalki, was whether there were any real revenue estimates, and the short answer to that was no. Because there isn't an existing form of sales tax up here, and nobody here is really big enough to have the existing borough, you know, warehousing and warehousing taxes involved, that there's not really a great picture of what kind of revenue might come in, and it does have to be very restrictive because the tax has to be limited to the physical boundaries of the sewer and water district. It's a bit interesting because it's the first time in the borough, at least that I'm aware of, that a sales tax has been put in place for a service area. Because as far as financially speaking, this is treated in a somewhat similar way to road and fire service areas in the borough. The difference being, of course, that this one is very limited by existing physical infrastructure.
Right. And, of course, down here in Palmer in particular, there's been a long history of working to be in compliance with regulations, and the city has just recently embarked upon a multi-million-dollar improvement so that what goes into the Matanuska River will be appropriate. What happens up there in Talkeetna? Does the river receive effluent, or what happens?
Yes. So what happens is you've got the lagoon, and it's meant to be a long-term process. The influence sits in there for the better part of a year, flows through some constructed wetlands, and then into the Talkeetna River.
Ah, okay. Okay, enough said. I also noticed in the news that in a very quiet way, it was just a little bit of a story, down in Juneau, the second retail outlet for marijuana opened up with very little discussion, very quiet, and I think the proprietor said they were very happy to. This was on Front Street, right down in the middle of town, operational. They sold most of their product within a few grams. They said, I know that there has been a bit of discussion about a similar establishment in Talkeetna. What's the status at the present time?
The establishment you're talking about is called the High Expedition. It opened up last Friday following the final state walkthrough inspection, and they'd been issued their permit in the spring, but were waiting on that final walkthrough before they could open their doors. And it opened without a lot of fanfare. You kind of word of mouth, and then people who happened by went in that day. I was there for a few hours on Friday, just kind of seeing the comings and goings and talking to some folks. And, of course, everybody who is intent on going in there, they all seemed pretty happy about it. There has been some controversy in recent months. The impression I've gotten is that what you have in that case is a very vocal minority. A relatively small group of people.
And very vocal.
You are right, Zuss. Absolutely. But for the most part, the Talkeetna Community Council had nothing to say one way or the other. They pretty much chose to stay out of it and just let the state process take its course. The chamber, Joe McEnany, one of the proprietors of that business, is on the Chamber of Commerce board at this point, but the chamber hadn't taken any action one way or the other. I think given the combinations of political realities in Talkeetna, what we ended up with in a lot of cases, even amongst some of the more politically conservative folks, was more of a live and let live attitude, because a lot of the politically conservative folks up here tend toward the libertarian side of things.
Okay.
So what about the vocal opposition? Did they just kind of give up and go away, or is there still some unhappiness, some grumbling?
There is definitely still some grumbling. It's noticeably subsided, with the exception of being directed at my coverage of the store's opening, but
and my coverage of the pre-opening before
exactly.
That.
I'm sure a lot of the same people emailed us about.
Yes. Many times. I do think that the lingering criticism that I've seen, there's one kind of grain of salt regarding how the distances from this store were measured from different locations, and that really became a bone of contention with, there's certain distances and regulations. You can't be, X feet from a church, from a child care facility. And some of the opponents were against the High Expedition were trying to argue that, the Park Service Visitor Center has kids' presentations. And I don't think that would fall under the regs. But one of the points they also raised was there is no government agency measuring the distances because the state defers to the local government. And in this case, the borough didn't do any measurements because the borough wasn't involved. There was no conditional use permit process.
And you're right. You're right about that because of the conditional use permit process got bypassed. What Joe tells me, and I've yet to be able to verify this, but he told me this earlier this week, is that when they had that final walkthrough and inspection, because those issues had been brought up before the MCB, that when the inspection happened, that they did walk off those distances.
Oh, interesting.
And that the inspector was satisfied. Now, like I said, I've yet to verify that, but that's what I'm being told by the proprietor.
That would go a long way, I think, to debunk some of the criticism.
Sure.
And would that be the last, the last hurdle or the last opportunity to stop it?
I think that ship has kind of sailed, Mark. I think the MCB was really the biggest opportunity for folks to stop it. But, you know, kind of part of what happened here is you did have a very vocal opposition, but they got involved pretty late in the game. Joe McEnany, one of the two proprietors, you know, his first appearance at a Talkeetna Community Council meeting was last February. And one of his most vocal critics was at the same meeting and spoke at the same meeting. So, but didn't really get involved in protesting this process until this winter. And so a lot of time had passed there and a lot of opportunity, public comment periods, that sort of thing. And then once it started to look more and more imminent, then you got folks involved. And then it became a much bigger issue.
Okay. Well, let's move on down the valley a bit, coming toward the lower valley. And stop for a moment and consider reactions to the Sockeye Fire trial. Sockeye Fire is sort of halfway between here and you. What is the sense of people's thoughts about what happened in that Sockeye Fire trial?
Well, I mean, you know, the Talkeetna area was largely spared. There were a couple of small fires that popped up here, but because of the work of a lot of the firefighters here, we were largely spared, so there's not quite the emotional attachment as there is in the southern end of our listening area down in Willow. And I know down there are a lot of folks very disappointed. I've read some of the stuff that Zaz wrote last week, and after talking with Casey Grove, who is kind of taken over the reins after Ellen Lockyer's retirement to cover the valley for APRN, there are a lot of people really upset, but part of what I've heard up here regarding that is just, you know, the fact that, yes, they may have been acquitted, Greg Emig and Amy DeWitt may have been acquitted of any criminal charges, but that doesn't obviate the possibility of civil suits going forward. And so here, at least, in an area where we didn't get as directly impacted, there's a feeling that, okay, well, a lot of these folks may still end up having their day in court.
But does a not guilty verdict in any way, take the wind out of the sails of the civil case?
Ask O.J. Simpson, Mark.
That's a good point.
Well, I think what might take more wind out is the state budget situation, that if the state is going to prosecute a civil case, the attorney, the prosecutor on the Sockeye case, Eric Senta, is now a white-collar crime prosecutor in Anchorage, so he's not in the Palmer office anymore. And, you know, the state is really looking at sharp budget cuts to the court system. It's entirely possible that there, you know, could be some kind of a class action suit and a private attorney, but, that takes a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I think that's a bigger stopping block. And just to correct the record, Susanna Caldwell was the ADN reporter who covered the actual trial. And I think that the reaction, and Philip was correct, that the reaction in Willow was really strong. And I think that a lot of people, or at least the victims, felt betrayed by the process. And primarily because there were a number of charges against Greg Emig and Amy DeWitt. And one of them was burning without a permit, which they basically confessed to in court. And so they were found not guilty even on that charge.
Right.
Which, you know, I think that at least some people figured at least one guilty verdict, at least convicted on one. Some of the more stringent, the tougher charges, with a reckless component, were harder to prove. But to get not guilty on every single count against him was pretty shocking and disappointing.
So what were the legal underpinnings of a not guilty verdict on burning without a permit?
No idea. Mm-hmm. Everything else you could see, I mean, the defense certainly tried to inject reasonable doubt at every turn, which is what they do. The burning without a permit, I'm not sure where the jury got there.
And what would you say to the other question that remains out there? If not them, then who? Because I understood that people were looking for a satisfaction of how did this happen? And that question remains unanswered.
I don't think that was ever explained in court.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and how involved are insurance companies at this point? I would think they would have a major interest in not having to cover the cost if fault could be found somewhere.
I think most of those costs were paid out.
Yeah.
It's been, 2 years almost.
Okay. Well, let's move to a place where let's stop on our way south in Palmer and be reminded that on Tuesday the Borough Assembly acted, and the present mayor of the borough, Vern Halter, had run saying that he probably wasn't going to do a lot of vetoing. Well, he did do a veto of an amendment to the school district money that would be provided by the assembly. And that veto was discussed and was sustained in a 4-3 vote. They lacked the number 5 to overturn the veto. And the impact, as was present in the school board meeting the next night on Wednesday, was to produce an array of budgets awaiting the determination from the legislature, which is now in an extended session, to determine just how much money would be flowing through and whether there is another way for the borough assembly to provide additional funds or there would be a variety of reductions in the operations of the school district. How's that all viewed up there in Talkeetna?
Well, in Talkeetna proper, people are very proud specifically of the elementary school here in Talkeetna, but also of Sioux Valley in a lot of ways. So you've got a lot of pro-school funding folks up here. And I think the idea of this extra $1.6 million didn't really have long enough to circulate for people to understand the impact it may or may not have had. I mean, even though it was covered in multiple avenues by multiple news sources, and so having it then removed again, there are going to be people who have just a gut negative reaction to any funding that was going to go to school operations being removed. But I thought I had Randall Kowalki here for our public affairs program on Wednesday and asked him about why he'd made the decision that he did. And he referred to it as basically, this being one of the last, in air quotes, cookie jars that the borough has left as far as extra funding sitting around before they have to start seriously dipping into reserves. And his philosophy was to try to preserve that. The argument that the borough makes is that, they effectively gave the school district a lot of extra money last year by eating the impact of the state's cut to school bond debt reimbursement that happened in the last legislative session. And so the philosophy, at least of one of the three people who voted to uphold the mayor's veto, was that, basically we're doing the best we can. We're already cutting borough services pretty significantly. The one that Kowalki likes to bring up is an 8.5% cut to emergency services funding while keeping school funding flat. The reaction is going to be, there's going to be a negative reaction anytime money that would potentially go to the classroom gets put anywhere else, basically, even back in the piggy bank.
And that's pretty consistent, that position that the assemblyman took with the written rationale provided by the mayor and his repeated statements that he was supportive of finding ways to fund and was looking forward to discussions with representatives from the school district and others to determine if there was some other way other than to going to these reserve funds and other funds to provide it. I haven't heard yet anything that has come and emerged from that. There have been a variety of discussions thrown out, but nothing definitive unless, Saz, you have something.
I don't know that it's definitive, but the school board apparently is going to reconsider the NANA, the privatization contract for custodial and nutrition services.
Yeah, that right.
And they're sort of using the veto as a trigger.
Right. Right at the end of the school board meeting, that was thrown out as a possibility, amongst many other things.
Again,
because Luke, their finance officer, provided a very distinct list of different budget possibilities. And it, as the meeting was beginning, just before it began, I asked him, well, what's your thought about what will happen? And he said, well, it could be anywhere from here to there, and that represented multiple millions of dollars of change and impact to programs. So basically, it seems the school district just simply does not know and has to have this decision by the legislature, which could run well into the end of May and possibly June.
And I think that's kind of become the norm for them over the past few years, is this degree of uncertainty. You know, and in, at the borough budget meeting, or the public hearing that was held in Willow before the passage of the budget, I spoke with Mayor Halter, and he basically said that, you know, he thinks that schools are going to be okay with this level of funding as long as the state legislature doesn't, quote, do anything stupid. And I asked him what he meant by that, and he responded by saying that, you know, the proposed 5% cut that had been put forward by the Senate is what falls into the level of stupid decisions, at least as far as Mayor Halter is concerned.
Okay. All right. Well, Zaz, you have covered something recently, and it happened there on Sunday. Troopers were called to a site at about mile 5 on the Connecticut River Road. And what's begun to emerge is a kind of an intricate tale involving a murder. Say a few words about that.
A guy named Jeremy Speaker his body was found about 5 miles up Connecticut River Road at a real rough campsite by a couple who went out for a walk on Sunday afternoon. And the story is a sort of a combination of, you know, the sordid underbelly of the valley that's, you know, it's been around for, unfortunately, for years. But also the victim, Speaker, was a U.S. Army veteran. I think there's much more to the story. Frankly, I think there's much more to the actual story of what happened than has been confessed to in the trooper's affidavit that was filed with the murder charges. The two guys involved, one was living in Eagle Hotel and one lived in Butte. And they say that it was self-defense. Their story, there are a lot of holes in the story. I guess that's all I'm going to say there. They're innocent till proven guilty, despite the contention of one that the opposite is true. It's just very troubling on a lot of levels.
And how long was the guy among the missing?
Oh, he wasn't. I mean, I'm not sure what his the people who know him, when they were looking for him. But he was living at the Eagle Hotel, and the murder happened overnight Saturday, so right. It's pretty quick. The Butte Fire Department reported at 1 in the morning Sunday to a vehicle fire in the campsite, and for whatever reason didn't see his body at the time, but his body may have been, I'm not sure what happened there.
Okay. Still an ongoing story to see further developments. The two, as I saw, were being held at $500,000 cash bond each, we'll find out more later. Well, we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition, but before we finish, Philip, have we missed some things that you need to say from where you are in Talkeetna?
Well, I think we've hit a lot of the big stories that have been going on in the upper part of the valley recently. Of course, we're getting deeper into climbing season, and there's, I won't say concern at this point, but there's some close monitoring going on up on Denali of conditions at base camp, a lot warmer than normal for this time of year. They're experiencing a loss in snowpack. There's a crevasse that's opened up a quarter mile outside of base camp, which is not unheard of, but relatively unusual. And I know that there's going to potentially be concern later in the summer if this keeps happening. About how long planes are going to be able to continue to land there would be what it looks like at this point.
Oh, that is a dramatic change potential. Okay. Saz, have we missed anything from your perspective?
No, but Philip just gave me another story to add to my list. Sorry, Philip.
I've got some good contacts for you, Beth.
Okay.
Okay. And Mark, I know you're about to embark on a travel across the country, and we have talked briefly about Mark calling in from other parts of the lower 48 to give us updates on what is happening there.
Dispatches from America.
Yes. And we look forward to that. That's going to be fun. Okay, I want to thank Zaz Hollander and Mark Kelsey here in the studio. Thank you, Zaz and Mark.
Good to be here, Mike. Thank you.
Always.
And I want to thank Philip Manning from KTNA up in Talkeetna. Thank you, Philip, for calling in.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure as always.
Okay. We'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.